He's been called the Defender of Gotham, the Caped Crusader, the world's greatest detective, the Dark Knight.
I'm whatever Gotham needs me to be.
He's gone by many titles.
I am Vengeance. I am the Knight.
But his name...
I am Batman!
Batman is one of the most famous and iconic fictional characters in the world. But why is that? What is it about this character that people love so much? In this episode of Pop Culture Icons, let's do some detective work of our own and explore the world of Bruce Wayne, aka Batman.
Podcast presented by Sonic Embassy.
Episode 13, Pop Culture Icons, The Batman, Part 1.
Welcome to Podcast presented by Sonic Embassy. This episode is part of one of our recurring mini-series called Pop Culture Icons, where we have fun and a lot of times get nostalgic exploring various nouns in popular culture. Get it? Nouns, person, place, thing? If you were to Google most popular comic book character, there's one that is consistently in the top 1, 2, or 3, many times number 1 in the search results that I get, and that, of course, is Batman. I haven't been to a ton of comic conventions, but of the ones I have attended, I feel like I can easily say that other than maybe Spider-Man, one of the characters, or at least related characters that are within his universe, that I see the most of either cosplay, or at the least, people wearing t-shirts of, is Batman. From avid comic book reader to casual movie watcher, ask a group of people who their favorite hero is, and chances are, someone is going to say Batman. Of course, the flip side of that is you'll also hear words like overrated, overused, played out, and etc. We'll talk more about that subject later on. Created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger, Batman first appeared in Detective Comics issue number 27 in the year 1939 in response to the popularity of the Superman. So who is Batman, and what makes him such an iconic character? Well, for these episodes, I had to get the insights of two of the biggest Batman fans I personally know, and one newcomer. One, I personally call him the Human Almanac / the Human Encyclopedia. He's the owner of one of my favorite comic book shops in Charleston, South Carolina, Soundwave Comics. He is an expert whose insights I found invaluable in this discussion. Greg Woodard.
My favorite comic book character is Batman. I have loved Batman since I was a little kid. As a 1970s kid, we all grew up loving Saturday morning cartoons, and I can't even remember a time when I didn't think Batman was the best thing ever. Yeah, I think it was a combination of the cartoons and the fact that, as a child, my parents delivered newspapers in the little town I grew up in, and every afternoon, we would stop by a little convenience store, and me being a little kid, I had my choice. I could get a icy, like a slushie. I could get a candy bar, or I could pick a comic book. And by the time I was 6 or 7 years old, I had a paper grocery bag full to the top with DC comic books, and 99% of them were Batman and Detective Comics, because that was my favorite.
The other person whose insight I need for this discussion is an avid Batman collector with quite an impressive man cave, or should I say bat cave, that I've been one of the privileged few to have been able to see it. It's not posted anywhere on social media. And he's also a very good friend of mine, Nick. His collection, especially a Batman's universe, is very impressive.
Oh, yeah. That's the problem with me. Before I buy something, I have to ask myself, are you ready to follow this through? If you buy one, you got to buy them all. And so I've always been into figures Starting to like statues now, but really figures was always what it was with for me. Buying the X-Men stuff back in the 90s and such. But when I got into the Batman figures, what got me was the Arkham Asylum figures. When I first saw those in a comic book store, they were just so beautiful. They looked exactly like the game, and they were just so well done. Unfortunately, I mean, I got like all the Arkham figures now, but when Arkham City came out, the paint wasn't as good. It was more, and so, but that paint and sculpt on those figures just got me into it. And then from there, it got to be all right. I need them all. It's like Pokemon now. I gotta get all those figures.
And let's get perspective of a newer Batman fan, one I call Dream Baby number 3, my daughter, one of my daughters. Hi, beautiful, my little shooby-dooby.
Wait, you didn't, this isn't how it's gonna start, is it? No, I don't want that to be in it. I just want you to ask me the questions. There doesn't need to be any of that.
Fine, but I don't care how old you get, I'll never stop. Okay, so you just discovered Batman.
I didn't just discover him, but I've been like a fan for like 2 years now.
Okay, so how did it start? I mean,
it started with...
I thought you might like the X-Men, right?
Start from the beginning. It started with X-Men, right? Watched the live action X-Men movies, and I enjoyed it. And then... Well, I guess technically it started with Young Justice, like was it 2010 Young Justice? And I started watching that. And then I stopped watching. I think I watched the first season and I like quit. I guess it just got away from me. And then later, a year later, then was introduced into the X-Men movies. Then I started watching the 80s or 90s cartoon. I don't remember which one. Is it 90s or 80s?
The X-Men cartoon, that was the 90s.
Okay, so it was the 90s X-Men cartoon. And then I was like, oh, let me revisit Young Justice. And I was watching it and I really enjoyed it. And then I really loved Robin. I loved Dick Grayson in the Young Justice season 1 and season 2. I thought his character was so cute. And then you were like, oh, since you love Robin so much, let me introduce you to the animated movies, the most recent ones. And then from there, it was just downhill. Well, the Son of Batman is how it started. And then
Downhill.
Uphill. Fine. Uphill.
No. Wait. No.
No. Downhill's not. I guess because going uphill is more difficult than going downhill. So I don't know. But I thought downhill was like.
No, downhill's right. You're right. No, you're right. I'm sorry. Okay, so now you're obsessed.
No. Fixation.
All right, confession time. I have to admit that I was never really a huge Batman fan. I mean, I did not like the character.
Well, I knew you didn't bring me back because you like me.
I don't. Not.
As a matter of fact, growing up, the overwhelming majority of cartoon heroes, I thought were just okay. I mean, they were cool, but I was indifferent. Like, cool, I like you.
I don't. Not.
I'll watch your cartoon because, I mean, it's a cartoon, but most didn't really connect with me, which is kind of why most of us can say we have a favorite, because there's something special about them that makes them our favorite, that we're drawn to. In researching for this episode, I started thinking about that and the psychology of why. Side note, there's a nice breakdown of this on the YouTube channel, The Closer Look, and the video entitled, How to Create a Great Character. Now, the creator here is focusing on teaching you his technique of actually making an interesting character, but I found the psyche of this appropriate to what I was wondering. There's a link to the full video in the show notes.
Bilbo Baggins is a very likable character, and that is a big part of what makes him an interesting one. But a character like Darth Vader is an iconic one. However, there is very little about him that is likable. If you ask me, the trait that every good character shares is that they engage the audience in the story that's being told, and by extension of that, that they are interesting. For me, when it comes to creating a strong character, there are three qualities that must be addressed: likability, competency, and activity. So, likability, how much will the audience like this character? Competency, how good are they at what they do? And finally, activity, how much do they persevere? Do they affect the plot, or does the plot affect them? Now, if you were to pluck any character from fiction and analyze these three factors, you should find they line up somewhere on this graph. Bilbo Baggins, he is not particularly competent, he is not hugely active, but he is very likable. Batman, he is very competent, he is very active, but not a particularly likable character. Something I found is that Sherlock Holmes and Batman are actually very similar characters in this respect. They are both not particularly likable, but they are both so brilliant at what they do and they persevere so much, we can't help but be engaged by their stories. Now, what happens if we fill up all of these factors, create someone who is extremely likable, very competent, and perseveres? What do we get? Well, we get a Superman. Bear in mind, this is based on my own interpretation of what likability means. I know this may sound a bit silly, but for me, I gauge likability on whether or not I think I would enjoy having a conversation with that character in real life. I could imagine me and Superman having a nice, pleasant conversation. If I met Bilbo Baggins at the pub, we'd have a nice conversation about the different kinds of cheese. But if I met Batman, I just couldn't imagine having a pleasant conversation with the guy. Or Darth Vader, for that matter.
I mean, Batman is by no means my favorite. But now, I'm consistently, say, engaged in the story being told with this character. I suppose I now have a great respect for this character. So I'm like, huh, when did that change for me? Well, before we get into all that, let's talk about the early days of this character.
Batman first appeared in Detective Comics number 27, which is 1939. So last year it was the 80-year anniversary. And then just a year later, he spun out in his own series in 1940 with Batman number one. And we've never looked back since. he was very much a dark and brooding character. Superman was more of the positive, fighting for, you know, of course, truth and justice. And of course, Batman, you know, as we go along in the early comics, you didn't have as much detail for his origin. It was later. There was a creator that worked together with Bob Kane named Bill Finger. And so many of the things that we love about Batman today were introduced to the character by Bill Finger. But in the early comics, you just saw that he was this dark vigilante, that he was waging a war on crime. And then later they established the idea and showed where his parents had been murdered, and that you know, he was this billionaire playboy. Of course, back then, millionaire playboy. Then later they introduced things that we know, like the Batcave, and of course, Batman was the first superhero character to have a sidekick with Robin, which became a huge thing in the comics.
If you're a Gen Xer, perhaps like me, your first memories of this character were from cartoons. And maybe reruns of the TV show from the 1960s. I mean, there were those iconic zingers.
Holy known unknown flying objects. Holy mechanical army. Holy one-track back computer mind. Holy understatements, Batman.
The zip. Bang. Pow. Those onesie pajama costumes. Cool car, though. I mean, was the Batmobile ever not awesome? It was silly. It was funny. It was great.
I have a younger brother. He's 3 years younger than me. And we were pretty much raised by our grandmother. And I remember being a little kid and, you know, you play make-believe. You play with your sibling. And I can remember my grandmother pinning a bath towel around my neck. I'm older and bigger. I would be Batman, and she would pin a little bath towel around his neck, and he had to be my Robin. He hated that, by the way. But we ran around the house and ran around the yard. We were Batman and Robin. And maybe the cartoon, I just thought it was so cool, the Batmobile. I always have loved all the different versions of the car. He had, like it says in the movies, the best gadgets, the best toys. It just was a big combination of things that just drew me to the character. And of course, a little later, as so many kids of the 70s did, I discovered, my brother and I, that there was a 1960s show that was live action with Batman. And of course, that's corny now looking back on it. But as a little kid, that 60s show was the best. It was so cool, so awesome. And I think no matter how old I get, it will always have a special place in my heart.
Then there were the awesome Saturday morning cartoons.
We all grew up loving the Super Friends.
The Super Friends.
It's the world's greatest Super Friends. Batman and Robin. Superman. Wonder Woman and Aquaman.
I love Super Friends, and to look back on some of those cartoons today, some of them are a little cheesy, a little goofy, but in general, there was kind of a seriousness to it. It was a fun cartoon, but there was always a problem that the team had to come together and solve, and there was definitely a little bit more, I feel, a seriousness to it compared to the live-action show of the 60s. As we get into the late 70s and the 80s, when they did the Superpowers cartoon, it took an even more serious turn. The cartoons from that series were very much inspired by the comic books, introducing new characters like Firestorm as an example, who was huge in the 80s.
Hey, so do you want to check out the Super Friends?
I don't know. I haven't tried it. Maybe. I mean, I watched the old X-Men cartoon. I don't see why I couldn't watch the old Super Friends.
Wow.
This is the challenge of the Super Friends.
But somewhere along the way, that campy Batman was about to go away.
Well, it's interesting how all these characters, not just Batman, but the others, as they've gone through time, they change and morph with the times. Batman, Superman, then after that, Wonder Woman and other DC characters. When they're first introduced, like in the 40s, you know, of course, we have to remember this is a time World War II is going on. People are seeking escapism, not just children, but adults too. So back during World War II, the characters are grim and gritty, and they're helping out in the war effort. And in a lot of the comics, it shows some of the characters like Captain America or Batman. They're punching out Nazis and fighting against the forces of evil. In the 50s, after the war, I think the public in general wanted to put that behind them. And if you're a comic book fan, you know that there was a time when comics were really kind of put under the spotlight. There was almost a crusade against comics in the 1950s, saying that they were too edgy in the 40s and too adult for kids. And that led to the publishers essentially trying to water down the characters, trying to make them more funny or friendly or more family acceptable for the times. And I think as we went into the 60s, you know, all characters, their popularity goes up and down. But at the time in the 60s, we were still coming off a time when Batman was portrayed as a more lighthearted character and not so serious. And it kind of went along with the television programming of the times, because of course back then we had Gilligan's Island and I Dream of Jeannie, all these more lighthearted shows. So
then things started to change.
Well, as we were saying, you know, all characters have phases where they're more popular or less popular and where they're portrayed in different ways. I think as we're coming into the 80s, in the early 70s, some of the DC creators like Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams, when they had runs on Batman and Detective, It was very intense, very much focusing on his skills as a detective, big adventure. But in the early 80s, I feel like Batman, as a fan, I feel like Batman maybe stalled a little. A lot of the stories at that time were just not as intense. And then Frank Miller comes along, I want to say it was about 1985, and did this miniseries, The Dark Knight. And it takes a look at a possible future for the DC Universe where Batman is an older hero and most of the heroes of our time have gone by the wayside. Meanwhile, Superman has become kind of like a puppet of the Reagan administration. He's working for the government, quelling uprisings around the world and, you know, flying in and flying out just as quickly. Batman realizes he has to come back one more time and insert his will on the world, his vision of how things should be, because to him, the world has gotten out of hand and it's time to do a little course correction. It was intense. It was heavy. It really changed the way so many fans perceived Batman, brought him back a lot more in line with his original status, you know, back in the day, and continues to inspire right on to movies like the Batman with Robert Pattinson today.
Then everything changed with one movie, Batman. In 1989, I remember the biggest marketing push my young mind had ever seen.
Right now at Taco Bell, you can collect free Batman cups, like a free Batmobile cup. Or a free Batwing cup. Four cups in all, free, with free refills and three cinnamon twists every time you buy a 32-ounce drink at Taco Bell.
I want you to tell all your friends about me. Batman.
The toys, so many iconic lines.
This town needs an enema.
And the soundtrack. I remember me and my best friend went to see it at a movie theater at the mall. Remember those? So 80s, I love it. The score of that movie was fantastic. And then the opening credits with that score. And then when the camera, it pulls back and it's revealed that the whole time we were tracing the inside of the bat symbol, I remember I was like, whoa, that was so cool. Batman 89 was the first movie that I ever bought a CD of the score. I remember I used to play it at night. I used to have these giant speakers on each side of my bed and I would turn it down really low and I would play it and fall asleep to it sometimes. And of course, I had to get that soundtrack done by the iconic musician Prince.
Well, you know, as a little kid, you know, I was born in 1980. So, you know, the earliest exposure to Batman was mostly very campy stuff from the 1960s show, the old Justice League show, or Super Friends, I'm sorry. Very campy, cheesy stuff. So to me, the first exposure I had to Batman as being cool was with 1989 Batman with Michael Keaton, which I was not allowed to watch as a little kid. But you know, you find those ways to watch the things your parents don't tell you you're not allowed to. And when I got those little snippets, it was just the coolest thing. It was so amazing, that movie. And I think that's that first hook in my jaws to get me into Batman.
So, baby girl, recently I had you watch Batman 1989 with me, right?
Yeah.
So what'd you think?
Which one was that? I know that I watched it.
It was the one with the Joker.
Oh yeah, that was something. I mean, Batman is what start. I feel like Batman is what started live action superhero movies. Like, that's what like started. Like, I don't think we would probably be somewhere without it, at least somewhere, but I don't think we would be as far as if it never happened. I feel like it popularized the idea that making comic book movies cool. So
okay, but did you like?
Did I like it? I don't really remember. I think it was fine.
You don't remember? That was like a few weeks ago.
That was months ago.
So Batman 89, I thought was amazing. The sequels after that, though, never quite resonated with me.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like you can handle Batman Forever because at least because Tim Burton started on Batman Forever, and then he left, and they brought in Schumacher. So you see that campiness getting in, but it still kind of connected and flow with the first two, which were very good for their time. I think that was the first time that they tried to make a really good, serious, you know, superhero movie. You look at all the crappy ones before that with the Spider-Man, Captain America and stuff. They were really coming out of that campy age with those movies. And then Schumacher with Forever, you saw it sink. And then with Batman and Robin, I can't even sit through that whole movie. When they came out again a few years ago, I was like, all right, I need to watch them again, see if I can appreciate them. And I sat through all of them. I got to Batman and Robin. I had to cut it up in like four parts. I couldn't handle it. It was so bad.
So I had you watch the sequels with me. Yeah. So what'd you think?
The worst one, I can't believe that it had to have been a joke. The last one, I don't remember. Yeah, what was it called? It was Batman and Robin. Batman and Robin, both of them, they had to have been a joke. It is just horrible.
Take two of these and call me in the morning. Or even whenever Batman pulls out his credit card and it was a Batman Forever credit card, just everything about it was so... The sad thing was, Arnold was perfect for that role. He would have done so well if the writing had been better. But that's true with so many comics. So often, you could have something that has so much potential and the writer just fails to nail it. Well, yeah, that was my first exposure. That didn't really hook me. When I first got into comics, I was more into Marvel. My friends that got me into comics, they were into Avengers and Captain America. I gravitated toward X-Men. And my first comic book that I ever bought was X-Men number 20. But then it was the animated series that really made me a Batman fan. And I think so with so many people, that is considered to be the best of all Batman. You know, when you ask people who is Batman, it's Kevin Conroy, you know? And so that really, I think even to this day is the standard for Batman, because especially when you contrast it to the show they did afterwards, which was The Batman. The animated series was, he was a detective. He was intelligent. Just about every episode, he was having to figure out who done it, or even if he knew who did it, how they did it, and track him down. So, there was just a very good, positive, hopeful tone toward it. And then you go to the series they did after that, The Batman, it was just, you know, kicking butt, fighting. There was no intelligence to it. And that's what I've always found to be the better Batman, is whenever he is having to problem solve. And it's been sad how many people completely miss the detective aspect of Batman. I mean, that's what he was created to be. That's what he's all about, is being a detective.
Have I made you watch the animated series, Batman the Animated Series?
No, but I know. About it.
Okay. But we did watch a movie that was in that era, which was Batman Mask of the Phantasm.
Yeah.
So what'd you think about that one?
It was good. It was good. I feel like I should have seen that little plot twist. I should have seen that coming, but I didn't. But I wasn't surprised when it happened, but I didn't see it, even though I should have.
Uh-huh, but did you like it, though?
I just said that I did.
Well, that's going to be a wrap for part one. I know, we're just getting started, right? Well, in part two, I think I narrowed down what the catalyst was that made me really start to pay attention to this character and why he is now one of my favorites. Plus, who is the Batman? Why does he do what he does?
You have learned to bury your guilt with anger. I will teach you to confront it and to face the truth.
And yet, with Batman, he's just a regular guy with no powers. He has pushed his mind and his body to the ultimate limit.
Batman, please, tell me you're not sending us on this joke of a wild ape chase.
I never joke about the mission.
One of the things that really, I get upset with so many people who just see Batman as just some spoiled, rotten kid who's trying to beat the pain away.
Either you're coming from a Marvel fanboy or a Superman fanboy.
That and more in part two of Pop Culture Icons, The Batman. That's going to be episode 14. So what do you think? Is Batman one of your favorite characters? Do you think he's played out? Think he's overused or overrated? I'd love to know. My email is studio@sonicembassy.com. And you can also find the Sonic Embassy on Twitter, Facebook, IG, Vero, Patreon, and our website is sonicembassy.com. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, if you love Batman,
I want you to do me a favor. I want you to tell all your friends about me.
Yep, so they can listen too. And we can continue to grow. And if you hated it,
I don't. Not.
Well, spread the word about that with the link to sonicembassy.com/podcast. If you have an idea of a noun that you feel is a pop culture icon and think it would make a great episode, by all means, let me know. Thank you so much for listening. I love you, and I hope you'll listen more soon. Don't forget to listen to part two on episode 14.
In the other day, Sonic.
Sonic Embassy.